Hi, Peter, do you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, my good man.
Great.
Give me one second. I'm just getting my memory together, Thomas.
Sure.
It's
I don't know if you mean digital memory or your actual memory, but
my actual memory. Yeah, that's a
yeah.
very different place.
Yeah.
Thomas, do I call you Thomas or Tom?
Tom's fine.
Okay. Let's play this intro jingle first, and we'll talk just after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
You are very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're good. I hope you're having a great day wherever you might be. If you're in Salt Lake City, if you're on the underground in London, or if you're just walking the streets in sunny Spain, God only knows. But I hope you're having a great one. We have a little bit of a treat for you today. Something a little bit different, says you, isn't it always? But a gentleman who has evaded the Sideshow on more than one, in fact, two occasions, is a gentleman by the name of Pete O'Dolph. Pete, however, I suppose he's reached a little bit of a higher echelon. There is a new feature-length documentary about the inspirational work of the Dutch landscape designer. It's about to be released on June the 13th at the Picture House in central London, and then it is to go UK-wide. And I am delighted to say I have Thomas Piper, the producer, the film director, I'm unsure of the title, the mastermind, the maestro behind that, on the line. Tom, how are you? You're very welcome to the Sideshow.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be on.
You're most welcome, my good man. Tom, just for the listeners at home, I just want to play this trail end. It's actually the very last moments of the movie.
Beauty is in so many things you wouldn't think of. And I think this sort of struggle about beauty and no beauty, I think that's what I like, you know. That seeing beauty in ugliness, or beauty in death, beauty in decay, beauty in the unexpected. I think that is part of my life too, you know. What I try to create with gardens is, of course, beauty, but the moment you say that I love plants that are dead, then you have a problem, because people don't like dead plants. I think it's the journey in your life to find out what real beauty is, of course, and but also discover beauty in things that are, on the first sight, not beautiful.
Tom, what's it like to work with a gentleman like Pete O'Dolph?
Well, it was a real thrill, I'll say that. And it's not, you know, the films I'd made before were immediately before this. I'd been making films about architecture, and before that, visual artists. And so coming to being able to spend all that time shooting in the outdoors first, and then in beautiful gardens second, I mean, that was its own pleasure, and slightly different from the projects I'd done before. But Pete as a subject was also, you know, he was great. He's a real, making documentaries is often a kind of, it's a slightly invasive procedure, and you kind of have to chase after your subject and keep after them to try to make sure you're not missing sort of what you think are valuable moments. And Pete was really collaborative, and he was much more, he would call me and say, you know, I'm going to go to Pennsylvania to visit some friends, or I'm going to go on this trip to Texas, which, you know, both of which made the film as scenes in the movie. And so it was, you know, that was a real delight, and made life a lot easier in terms of getting good material, but also felt like we were really working together on it.
For those who are unaware, Tom, who and what is Pete O'Dolph? I guess what attracted you as a person who makes film or cinematography to Pete?
Certainly going into the project, my understanding of Pete and you know, my appreciation for him was as this sort of, you know, kind of the most celebrated figure in garden design today. I mean, he's often referred to as the rock star of garden design. You know, whether that's a sort of euphemism or not, he for someone who isn't, I make this confession all the time that I'm not, in fact, a gardener, or I certainly wasn't before I started this project. And so So for me to know of him, it was very much through his work on some really high profile projects, most notably the High Line in New York, and also the Lurie Garden in Chicago, which were two of the projects that I was able to see in person. And that's really how I got to know of his work. But it was through, he's somehow reached a level of appreciation or celebrity again, where he's crossed over into the world of design, into the world of the art world as well, which is something that I'm a little bit more familiar with. Even in fashion, Vogue has written about his work. So there's something about his work and maybe he as a character that has the sort of crossover appeal or sort of transcended just a strictly garden audience.
You noted euphemism, Tom. We've spoken off air for those of you listening at home. And so in that chat, I pick up little bits and bobs. And one of them was about the poster that you had originally designed, Tom.
I guess sort of testament to his rock star status. But the two anecdotes. I mean, one was the design of the poster for the release of the film, which I had worked up an original design, and it was an image from one of Pete's gardens, and I thought it was a nice abstract image that really showed his composition and the way that he looks at gardens. And the distributor for the film immediately said, well, Pete's got to be in the poster. And he explained to me that the whole focus of the release was going to be for a certain demographic, and it would be people that would be responding to Pete as a handsome man. So that was one tip off as to his appeal, maybe, perhaps. But the other story is that when it didn't make it into the film because it was sort of towards the end that I was shooting with him, but he's doing a project in Delaware for a new botanic garden, the Delaware Botanic Garden. And I happened to be going with him for his very first visit to the site of where the garden is now being planted, where it was going to be. And it was his first trip there. And he had just flown into Newark Airport, and we got in a car together and we drove down 2.5 hours to Delaware. And as we arrived at the site, all the people he was there to meet, which was everybody from the garden, including the mayor of the town and some of the funders for the project. And as he got out of the car, which was a black sedan, which fit, just almost a limo. But as he got out of the car, everybody just broke into a standing applause. And it did feel like another moment where, it could have been Mick Jagger or somebody stepping out of the car, except it was in this barren field in the middle of Delaware.
When I think about Derslate and the people that asked me to do the garden, a contemporary art dealer, a gallery. Part of gardening is putting things together in a composition. But contemporary art is not always about the aesthetics. It's about people that try to step over a line or a threshold. It's people struggling for their own sort of identity.
Very much thanks to Sophie, who's been working alongside you, Tom. But I did get to see the movie yesterday, and I watched part of it again this morning just to make a few notes. And we again spoke about this off air, that you can make the most beautiful gardens in the planet, and sometimes they just remain beautiful gardens, but nobody is aware of this. You can make the most beautiful gardens, but in a nutshell, if I run away with your wife or your boyfriend or your husband or your partner, you're going to think I'm a moron, and therefore the beauty becomes almost immediately extinct. In Pete's case, it was a little bit different because he didn't always work at this, number one. But number two, he has, to his credit, a sort of an abstract way of thinking. But I don't say that because of the planting.
So for me, again, the attraction to Pete is what inspired me to think it might be a good project, I guess I should say, is this idea that he was doing something and has been associated with this idea of doing something that wasn't done in gardens. So immediately it's this sort of idea of pushing the aesthetics or the sort of medium of plants a little bit further, so having made films about visual artists, I mean, that was something I responded to, this idea that, he was pursuing an idea that was not not common or not traditional. And I think it's very much, what he's maybe most associated with is this idea of planting and designing for every season so that, you know, and it's very clear. I mean, I think you get the sense from the film, but certainly when I was shooting with him, I mean, to be there in his garden with him in October, he's euphoric. I mean, that really is, I think, for him, the height of a garden, sort of as everything is, the flowers are starting to fade and things are starting to go brown. And it's just this kind of a much more muted palette, and everything's a little bit of a mess in the garden, especially his garden at Humalo, which feels like this sort of, he's really pushing his ideas the furthest there, like some sort of laboratory or artist studio for that analogy. And so, you know, I think that's what he's most, I mean, that's sort of the iconic vision of his gardens, is this sort of late fall when plants are not technically dying, but you feel like they're dying. And then I think associated with that, and what I feel like about his gardens now, is that it's really like there's something about the way he evokes a real emotion. And as he says in the film, I mean, what he's trying to do is take the emotional response that he has from sort of natural settings like the prairie in the Midwest of the United States, and then create a design, an artificial design, but that evokes, that prompts that same emotion, that somehow inspires people to feel in that way. And I think that's where I feel like he's really leaving a lasting impression. So that the gardens, they're not just visual delights, but they're, you kind of feel them as well.
There are two films that I have seen, including this one, that are about people involved in horticulture. The last one that I saw, and a gentleman I had the pleasure to meet, was Ron Finley, who may be better known to you listening at home as LA's gangster gardener. This one, I was looking at it with a very different eye. It's a conversation that's come up a lot with garden designers that I've spoke to, that if you build, as I did, the 13th century castle in France, we finished that in the second week in November. So for me, the photographs of it are absolutely terrible. You had, or at least Pete had, the added advantage of recording it over a 5-season period, so you got it all encompassing at Pete's favorite time of the year, but also at the time that others may appreciate it most. How difficult was it to do that, Tom?
Wasn't difficult beyond sort of the investment of the time to sort of be patient enough to shoot over that duration. But that was always the intention. I mean, at the outset, when I first talked to Pete about doing it, I really, the ambition wasn't much beyond just wanting to do maybe even a short piece about just his garden in Humalo, like his own private garden. But as I got more involved and sort of spent more time both with him and then also the way in which he would bring me into these other sort of side trips, it started to feel like it could be a longer film and that he could really carry it as a character. But I'd always thought from the outset, like just knowing about the way that he's celebrated again for designing for every season and into the seasons where most people sort of think, well, we'll just wait till next year for the garden to come back for us to enjoy it. It just felt like it would have to be shot over time. And then, you know, the beauty of a film is that you get to see time, you know, different from a photograph. And so then it became the idea of how to make it became how to sort of compress time in an interesting way so that you could really appreciate what he's doing by being able to witness a garden in the space of 75 minutes, be able to see what happens over the course of an entire year or 5 seasons in this case.
When you're coming autumn, it's all about brown. And in spring, it's all green. I think that's nice, though. I don't think you need more in this time of the year. I think if you would see the whole garden in flower, it would work not right on your mind. If you look around you in nature or in the fields, it's all about the beginning. Of course, you see the plants you've seen last year, but it's already a year ago that you saw them. If you see plants as good friends, then you see your friends back after a year in a sort of glorious situation. So you know when you leave the garden tonight that tomorrow there will be something new in bloom, like that poppy over there.
My conversation with friends about this in the last 24 hours was, I think there are points and times in my life where people have shown me photographs of their gardens on their telephones, which I am, I should say, delighted and privileged to see. But in this case, I think this was one of them where, because of what you had recorded and because of what Pete had created, I did actually sit back. I wasn't sure of what I was about to see, but between the cinematography and the music that went with it, it sort of had me in awe. And to put that in context, twice my cup of coffee went cold because I forgot it was there.
That's real. That's a real indication, right? Cold cold coffee is proof.
It is, though, Tom. It's a nice compliment that when you time pauses and everything stops still, when you, as I invariably say it, when you see that woman on the far side of the bar, you drop your pint glass on the floor, you don't even know that it's in your hand, and you don't even know that you've dropped it. And that is, in a nutshell, what you made happen by what you did and by what Pete created, and you both created, I suppose, together.
Well, no, yeah. I mean, that is a great compliment. And I think, you know, for me, again, I was never going to be able to make sort of an instructional film about, say, how to garden like Pete, or to sort of unpack the goings on that make his gardens work on a horticultural level. And so the intention was always to really just try to recreate the experience of being in these gardens for an audience in a cinema. And to be as sort of true to that experience as possible. But I think in the same way that Pete sort of will visit these far off places, or just go to the prairie in Illinois and then think about how he can recreate that experience through a designed garden, you know, making the film is also very much a recreation of that experience. And so the sound design that goes into creating both the soundtrack with the music, but then also the soundtrack of the ambient sounds, the birds and the wind and the rustling of the leaves. I mean, all of that is in fact built essentially. I mean, I'm trying to work with materials that I got while I was shooting, but a lot of it is a recreation and hoping to then make it feel like you've been to these places, but in a way that's sort of heightened or somehow exaggerated so that it has a kind of emotional, again, an emotional impact, a narrative impact as well, so that 75 minutes feels like it's time well spent.
But that's the ultimate, though, Tom. I mean, if I take it in book terms, there are books that will remain nameless for the minute that are nothing to do with horticulture, but I've literally read them. I mean, I've sat down at 9 o'clock at night and I woke up the next morning, remained awake through to the next day and put the book down and went, well, that's good. I think I'll have a cup of coffee and I might go to bed for an hour. You don't notice time passing when you are totally absorbed into something else. For it to happen with a subject that is something that I've loved all of my life, studied and done nothing but, I suppose it's infallible when I consider that I've only ever seen two films about horticulture related subjects in my lifetime. Why, can I ask you, in your opinion, as a person who was not in the horticulture industry, why has it taken so long to find a Pete O'Dolph? And do you think there'll be another one? Is gardening about to become the new rock and roll? Do you think there's another one out there?
I'd like to think so. I mean, I do feel like there's, it's hard to sort of separate out my sort of discovery of the garden audience in a way that having made this film and realizing there's a fantastic audience of people who love gardening, love plants, love nature, and that have responded so well to the film. I mean, it's hard to separate that out from, is there also some sort of emerging appreciation of gardens that's transcending what's always been there? It's kind of hard to say, but I do feel like what I think of my personal experience with having the good fortune of living in New York and being able to go to the High Line, not as often as I'd like, but being able to access it easily enough, the benefit, I mean, the success of that project and the benefit you can get from just visiting that very artificial and designed space, or similarly in Central Park or Prospect Park. I mean, I live in Brooklyn and that's very close by. I do think there's a sense of how important these spaces are, and in an urban context, even more so, and probably some indication of how detached, how separated we've become from natural spaces like that. And so I think that to me, I feel like when I'm able to show the film and talk about it, obviously I can't answer all the specific questions about, you know, everybody wants to know about mulching or pest control. And, but for me, I feel like the essence of it is how important these spaces are. And when you can do it on a scale like Pete does for big public projects, I mean, I think it's remarkably valuable. And I do think that's some indication of how much we need them and how much we need to be reconnected to what those spaces are about, whether they're actual wild areas or just design public parks.
Even if there's nothing in flower, you can try to read the pattern of a landscape. This Aptisia, which is a lower one, flowered maybe a month ago, so that's over, but the shrubby form is still there, and the contrast with the gray and the green is
too
beautiful.
Nice, yeah.
There's an element of it though, Tom, in my head and my heart, where when I look at what Pete has created, and again, we've alluded to it briefly, where I think he's in conversation and part of the film, and one of the guys working with him, is it Rob, says to him about how he was growing all these Native American plants all of the time, and nothing sold really, I don't want to misquote him, until that is, he worked with Pete, and all of a sudden he can't keep them in stock. And in my head, I'm sort of saying, well, it's kind of like me playing Mamas and the Papas or Jefferson Airplane for my 9-year-old, and you turn around and she says, oh my God, this is like a new revelation. You're saying, but it was always there, princess. It was always there. It's just, it goes back to that quote again, where I have it written down somewhere, because believe it or not, I actually did do a little bit of research for that one. One of the quotes I think is from Rick Dark, where he says, your work teaches people how to see things they weren't able to see before. And I just thought that was ultimately beautiful, but you, I guess, showed that through your script about somebody else. I say script, what people are about to see when they go to the picture house on June 13th.
To me, this is where the connection to, I don't want to belabor this idea of whether Pete is an artist or not an artist, or whether a garden designer can be an artist. I mean, I sort of like the ambiguity of that discussion. But I do feel like the way in which I responded to his work and continue to respond to it is similar to how I respond to art that I really enjoy or I'm really fascinated by. And a lot of that impact is the way in which it makes you look differently. And whether that's seeing things that have always been there that we just haven't been able to recognize or pay attention to, or whether it's seeing something entirely differently. I mean, I think it works in both senses, that the way in which he sort of celebrates seed heads and plants that are grasses once they've gone dry and brittle. I mean, I do think in many ways that's people seeing beauty in something that they would have otherwise just thought was garbage and needed to be cut down. So I think it's seeing something new, but then I think there is that sense of, you know, we've forgotten how to appreciate the beauty of the prairie. But then when you go to the Lurie Garden in Chicago and you see the way Pete's sort of evoking a stylized idea of that, then it reconnects you to be able to appreciate that beauty in a way that we just sort of forgot or stopped paying attention to.
I mean this in the nicest way of asking this, Tom, but there are things that I have done in my life where I turn around as a young kid with my mom watching, as a slightly older kid with long hair listening to Nirvana, but yet still potting up plants or learning how to propagate plants through college, where I never went home really, to the point that I'm now a little bit, inverted commas, more mature, I'm told, and people look at what I have in my head to an extent. And even if I take the castle in France, which meant a lot to an entire town, and on first response on seeing those designs, there were some giggles for what was about to happen, until the eyes start to open and people start to see it, and all of a sudden it's, oh my God, this is actually this is something special that we have here. For you as a guy behind the lens, did you get partway through that journey and sort of scratch your head and say, what have I got myself into here? Because you've got a guy not looking at a castle with a tree, and a tree, even in its dormant state, has a trunk and it has branches, and people can see what it might become, or at least are more used to seeing what it might become. You've got a guy who's looking at, as you rightly noted it, a seed heads and plants in a state of decay.
I think, again, that was the attraction to me. And so I really enjoyed the fact, I mean, some people have asked, well, you know, why is the five seasons, the progression of five seasons, fall, winter, spring, summer, fall, and not some other, you know, beginning in summer or whatever. It was because that's literally when I started shooting, was in October with Pete. So it sort of felt like the place to start. But I also loved that it then meant you had to make it through winter in order to come back around to when a lot of people imagine a garden to be, as you say, at its peak, or as, you know, beginning the excitement of spring, at least. But I just think maybe the perversion or this idea that somehow winter is a time for a garden, it was really appealing to me in the way that it felt like it was really a radical idea, or sort of pushing the idea of what gardens can be. You know, again, I think there's a certain amount of being new to the field, so I didn't, you know, what I've now come to appreciate is how long the lineage is of those ideas, and not that it doesn't begin and end with Pete. But I think it was always something that felt like the source of my fascination was the idea that, you know, you could go to a garden in late December and it would be thrilling in its own way.
I think I'm correct in saying, are there 60 plus locations now for the film, Tom?
Yeah, the release is going to be pretty wide in the UK, which is great. It's very exciting. I mean, it came out in theaters, in movie theaters last summer in the States and in Canada. And then we just sort of, took us a while to sort of organize the UK release, but it does also feel like there's, it's been great to realize the way in which gardening, how it's held in the UK. I mean, it's remarkable, that it feels like such a part of the fabric of culture there in a way that, that isn't quite true in the States, it seems. So it does feel like the response is, even before it opens, has been fantastic. So it's exciting to think it'll have that wide an exposure. And then eventually, you know, once the cinema release plays out, it will be, we'll be making it available for, you know, on DVD or streaming platforms as well. I mean, that's all to come, so.
Well, all I can say is congratulations, Tom. I absolutely adored it. And for you listening at home, if you're stuck for any of the information at all, at Sudshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSudshow or Sudshow.com. If you're stuck again, just send me a note. We'll put you directly in touch with Tom and the crew. Tom, a huge thanks to you and also Sophie behind the scenes for helping me piece this one together. And again, huge congratulations. And hopefully I'll be in the country when I next have an opportunity to interview Pete.
Thanks again, Peter. It was a lot of fun.
You too, my good man. Hey, when are we going to talk, as by the way, about Peter Donegan, the new Pete part two, the Pete Donegan movie?
Well, we'll begin to sketch something out. It'd be I think it'd be I can imagine it'd be a slightly different take on a garden movie, but probably one that would be a lot of fun to make.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So we'll have a pint of Guinness tomorrow, Tom. We'll have a chat about it. I look forward to it. Pleasure. Thank you so much, Tom. Real pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
All right, excellent. Take care, buddy.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
If I ask myself, has it influenced me? I think, oh, God, this is good. You know, look at the big leaves. Oh, that could be terrific. You know, just one or three in the garden. Seeing this and trying to evoke the same feeling, I think that's what it is. That is all my life. That is my life, in fact, yeah.